It is Tuesday, January 18th. I'm Dan Nathan. I am joined by Guy Adami, my dear friend. You are watching Market Call Macro, where Guy and I break down the biggest headlines of the day through the lens of the futures market. That's what we do every Tuesday, Market Call Macro here. We have a huge show today. A lot of volatility right out of the gate. Kind of started the week the way we did last week, with a lot of downward volatility. We're going to be talking about bond yields surging, stocks sinking, and oil very near 52-week highs. Guy's been all over that. Plus one for the road that you won't want to miss. Today's market call, though, is brought to you by our presenting sponsors, CME Group, where risk meets opportunity. And of course, Open Exchange. They manage, Guy Adami, wait for it, buddy, virtual meetings that...
They matter, Dan. They matter.
Now, here's the thing. You usually intro Market Call. Let's just be really frank about that. But you had some stuff going on over the weekend. You didn't even tell us about it. Guy, you're a bit old school, but your daughter who's home from school, she gave us a little heads up. There's some stuff in the house. There's a little pipes. There's this and that or whatever. So we thought we'd take a little bit of a load off here this morning. How's that working out for you, taking the back seat?
Great song from the band, by the way, The Weight. Take a load off. And listen, I'm just going to say it. Shit happens. Deal with it and push forward. Persevere. If she didn't tell you, you weren't going to find out from me.
Listen, I know you're probably like knee deep in water, you know, in your little home studio there. All right, let's get to it, because underwater right now are bonds. Okay. They are underwater, which you know what that means. The inverse of that would be yields going higher. Now, Guy, you have been steadfast about a 2% 10-year for over a year now. And just so you know, when you started making that call in January of 2021, yields on the 10-year U.S. Treasury were literally 50 basis points. They were like at all-time lows.
Yeah, look, and I'm going to stand by it. And at times last year, it didn't look like that was going to happen. And you actually pointed out over the summer that it was a really good chance that yields would go back down. And they did, in the form of 1.13% or so at the trough in 2021. And that was sort of confusing me. And look, I'm still a bit confused. I think we should be significantly higher. But here we are. I was watching the football game last night. I was flipping back and forth, and I noticed that bond yields opened about 181. And within a couple hours later, we're talking about 185 in the 10-year, which we haven't seen, I want to say, in three or so years. Now, I think that's negative for the broader market. Today, that appears to be the case, and we'll see. I'm going to stick by it and say we're going to see 2%. I thought we would see it by the end of 2021. It didn't happen. But here in the middle of January, we're fast approaching that 2% level.
Yeah. So, Guy, we have a five-year chart of this 10-year U.S. Treasury yield. You see the breakdown. You know, it had support back there in 2017. Then it broke down in 2019. And that's really where it hit resistance, just below 2% pre-pandemic. And you saw, obviously, with all the Fed action and what they did to Fed funds, that we saw the 10-year, like I said, nearly go to zero for all intents and purposes. But if we get to two-year, and you've been calling for that, so directionally, you've been 100% right. You see that 45-degree. It's a really nice uptrend, right? That it's been in off the lows. What happens then? Because, you know, that 2% level, that 2 to 1.5% was thought to be generational lows. But here we are now facing that technical resistance. And then we obviously are going to talk about the 2-year. What does the 10-year do at 2%? That's what I'd like to know.
Well, that's exactly right. And you pointed out that in 2017, that 10-year around 2% proved to be support. Prior support proves to be resistance. And we mentioned Top Gun couple weeks ago about being in the danger zone. Well, now we are on the outskirts of being in the danger zone, and we'll see. We'll see. I think the move is going to be now quick to 2%. We'll see what the market does with it, and then we'll see what yields do with it. Look, there's a real good chance, and this is completely somewhat counterintuitive, but if yields were to go to 2%, you could see the broader market breaking down, and then you could subsequently see a flight to quality in the form of the bond market, which will take then yields lower. I'm not trying to be too convoluted, but I think that makes sense to you. I hope it makes sense to our viewers.
Well, it does make sense if you do find ourselves in a slowing economy. You saw what happened overnight in China, Guy. I mean, like, you know, the Chinese GDP print near 4%, which, you know, seems okay, not for them. You know, 10 years ago, their GDP was growing at double digits percent, so it's been coming down precipitously. They actually lowered interest rates on a couple different interest rates. And, you know, they have a zero COVID sort of bound here. You just mentioned the two-year, or we got to talk about the two-year, because that parabolic move, if you look at that chart over 5 years, again, you see that breakdown. The two-year yield is going to track Fed funds much closer, right? Because that's a nearer dated yield here. You see it just kind of went from 1.5 basically to zero. And now here we are at 1%, nearing what? Nearly, I don't know, two-year highs. Guy, mm-hmm. What's your take on the two-year? Because that's the one that you really want to follow here.
Well, I mean, look about it. In September, in the fall of last year, we were talking about a two-year yield that had been basically sideways around 20, 25 basis points for the better part of a year. Market not anticipating anything, I guess, in retrospect, and correctly so. But here we are. We've now more than quadrupled off those levels. And I still think there's some room to go here. I've said on Fast Money, I think I've said on Market Call, that I think the 210s would narrow to about 30 basis points. I think we're talking about an 80 or so basis points level now. And I think that 30 basis points, I thought it would come in the form of sort of 1.5 and 180. And, you know, maybe I'll be right, maybe I'll be wrong. Right now, that 10-year sort of on a collision course with 2%. The point is, rates are going higher. And I think the two-year, and Danny Moses, who does our podcast with us every Friday on the tape, has talked about we're looking at the wrong thing in the form of the 10-year. We should be looking at the two-year, and he's 100% correct. That's why we have it up today.
Right. And so, Guy, you know, listen, you just said you may be right, you may be wrong. One of the things that you and I try to do is kind of take some really smart analytical tools to help us with the inputs here. One of those is from our fine sponsor, CME Group. They have this Fed Watch tool, which is basically calculating the probabilities of Fed movements at their next meeting. We know that January 26th, in a week or so, the Fed is going to meet, and the Fed Watch tool at CME is saying there's a very low probability, single digits, that they do anything there. We know that Bill Ackman, prominent hedge fund investor, is saying they should go 50 basis point hike to regain some credibility. But the Fed Watch tool in the March meeting, there is no February meeting, is saying about an 88% chance of a 25 basis point hike. And what's interesting about that is that week over week, Guy, it is up. I think when we quoted this on Market Call Macro last week, it was at a 72% chance. Now, interestingly, okay, the markets have been volatile and they've come down. So the Fed is going to be steadfast on battling inflation and not worried about near-term stock market volatility?
I don't think they should be. And, you know, for the first time in a while, maybe they're worried more about inflation than they are in the marketplace. And look, this somewhat comes down, and this is not a political show, but people will say, well, what's the difference between now and 2018 when the Fed started on this course in October of that year? And there are quite a few differences. Back then, inflation was not a concern whatsoever. Back then, you had an administration that was laser focused on the stock market and what it meant to the administration in terms of a report card. And you also had an administration browbeating the Federal Reserve into keeping rates low. Those things do not exist now. I think right now, this administration is far more focused, rightly so, by the way, on inflation concerns than they are about the market. That could change, Dan. I mean, if the market were going down 15 to 20% in a straight line like we saw 3.5 or so years ago, maybe that narrative changes. But right now, the focus on the Fed is squarely on inflation. And again, I will say, correctly so.
Yeah, but Guy, you know, you say it's not a political show. That's a really important input. This is an election year, right? We have midterms, right? And usually a new president doesn't do well in that. So what just happened over the last month or so, we saw President Biden consider some other candidates for Fed Chair Powell's, you know, spot there. And the about face, and you've been saying this, I think, for a couple months now, the about face has to do with him being renominated mm-hmm. and what maybe the quid pro quo is like, listen, we got to make sure that I guess the citizens are not more concerned about inflation than they are about other things when they go to the ballot boxes in the fall. So I think it's an important and nuanced point that you make, bud.
The first thing he said upon his nomination, you know, the first time he spoke, yeah, they did a complete 180 in terms of the narrative, in terms of now fighting inflation. And oh, by the way, we're going to sort of retire. And I think that was the term he used, the word or the phrase transitory, which I found to be really interesting. And I think you bring up a right point. This administration, you look at the polls, things are not going particularly well. One of the biggest things hurting the polls is inflation concerns. Again, whether justified or not, that's not what we're here to do. That's what's out there. And here we are. with our next chart, Dan, looking at big tech under pressure. Why is it under pressure? Well, for all the reasons that we've been talking about for the last 8 or 9 minutes, but when valuations don't matter in a zero interest rate environment, they certainly matter in a rising interest rate environment. And that's what we're seeing first and foremost here with this chart.
Yeah, so this is the NASDAQ 100 futures here. And, you know, we've been talking about it on Market Call, you know, for weeks, if not months, Guy. And there was a stat that I read over the weekend that, you know, 40% of the stocks in the NASDAQ were down more than 50% from their recent all-time or 52-week highs. That's just a staggering number. Now, we know the concentration, you know, in that index with five or six names that make up nearly 50% of the weight of it, but you're seeing a lot of really poor price action. And I think probably a lot of the names that have been hardest hit are either just way too high valuation or not particularly profitable. And to your point about higher interest rates, Guy, you know, people or investors in particular are taking a finer look at that. If you look at the five-year chart, you draw that uptrend from the pandemic lows, and you see that we just broke that uptrend and there's room to go. And that goes back to this whole kind of push and pull between the Fed and their focus, and obviously the White House with very poor approval raising, their focus on getting prices at the pump or goods and services prices, you know, somewhat stabilized here, probably more important than worrying about the NASDAQ coming in 10 or 15% from those recent highs when you consider the performance over the last 2 years.
And this is a NASDAQ futures chart. Again, thank you for from our friends at CME, but it shows a significant break of an uptrend line that we've been in since the March lows of 2020. This is significant. The question is, where do we find solid footing? And maybe if we look at our next chart, we can sort of figure it out together. It probably comes, Dan, in the form of that 200-day moving average that we've been flagging for quite some time. You know, something we've gotten close to, but not nearly close enough. Well, we're a lot closer than we've been in that sort of 15,000 level. 14,980, if you want to get down to brass tacks, is absolutely now in the crosshairs.
Yeah, no doubt. And listen, again, if we're just going to be breaking all these, what some would say are arbitrary lines on charts to the downside in the throes of a sell-off here, why not go back towards those lows from October, Guy? That would be about a 15% peak-to-trough decline if we were to get back to kind of 14,400. That would take out, I think, a good bit of excess. If we got back down there, listen what that means. That means that you've seen a meaningful correction in the biggest names, Microsoft, Apple, Google, Amazon, on Facebook, Tesla, Nvidia. And that is the healthy setup, is put a little fear in the market, just as we've seen lots of fear in these high growth names have seen deceleration, right? So that's to me what sets up for a mid-year sort of new high sort of scenario. You know, we need to kind of back and fill a little bit, especially at a time when we have 40-year high inflation. Hey, Guy, I just want to switch to one topic here because this is another one that you've been all over. And, you know, one night on Fast Money a few months ago, and I know you said it plenty of times on the Market Call, you said, keep an eye on the Russell 2000. Keep an eye on the Russell 2000. And it has to do with rates, in your opinion. Well, look at this tweet right here. And this guy, Tavi, I went through his Twitter and he's got some really good charts here. But he's basically saying what you've been saying. You want to know the direction of the S&P 500 when it ultimately ends up correcting, keep an eye on what's going on in the Russell.
Small caps, to me, tell everything. And we look at it through the lens of the IWM, but there are a number of different ways to look at it. But we have said on countless times, you've been in this very defined range now for a year. Outside that breakout to the upside that we saw last fall of sort of 210 to 235. Well, here we are right at huge support level. And if you think about it, again, to hammer home a point we've been making, the most economically sensitive names are the names found in the Russell. Now, what's interesting here, Dan, in my opinion, is that if the economy were doing really well and rates were going higher, that would be a great scenario. But this tells a much different story. This tells a story of rates higher, but the economically sensitive names not doing particularly well, which mean inflation is what's driving this. Again, this is me just trying to connect the dots. Well, here we are. If you look at this chart, a futures chart, says everything you need to see, Dan. Here we are right at these critical support levels. You have to ask yourself a question. Are we going to hold it now for the fourth or fifth time? Are we finally going to break through it? As they say, that's what makes markets.
No doubt. I mean, that is a pretty fascinating chart. You look at the Russell, the mini futures here, and you see 21.25. That's a level it's just bounced off on five occasions almost over the last year. But Guy, we got to talk about, you know, you just mentioned, and without saying the word, the potential for stagflation, right? For modestly higher, or not modestly, but higher prices of goods and services in a slower growth environment. And I don't know, we can't go to the S&P 500 without talking about what's gone on in bank stocks over the last few trading days. JP Morgan got earnings kicked off the entire banking sector, but obviously for S&P 500, that stock's been down 10%, Guy, in two trading days. Today, Goldman Sachs, your former employer, down 8% in one fell swoop. It's down 17% from its all-time highs made just a couple months ago. The banks never confirmed any of the new highs in the S&P. And now you see this S&P 500, which has not broken its uptrend. But what are the bank stocks telling you about the direction of the S&P 500, not just your Russell 2000 tell?
Well, it's interesting. You know what's fascinating about that? And you bring up a great point. You know, people will point to the banks when things are going well to say it verifies, it sort of galvanizes this bull case for the S&P 500. And then when banks are doing poorly, you'll hear those same people saying, well, it doesn't validate it because it's such a small component now of the broader market. It's one or the other. You can't have it both ways depending on your narrative. What does it mean to me? Well, we're losing another market leader, theoretically, and that 45-30 level, which we've bounced off of specifically on that terrible Monday, December 20th, if you go back and look, we bounced off at that level the same day we bounced in the Russell and a number of different ETFs. Well, here we are approaching it again. We say all the time, you know, no such thing as triple bottoms. And the third time things get tested, they typically gets breached. Well, I think it's going to happen. And now 44.20 or so, again, a 200-day moving average that we haven't seen in eons seems to be in the crosshairs. Now, you said something before a few minutes ago. You think that's a healthy setup. I completely agree. I think if you're bullish, which obviously 99% of the people want to be given their holdings, I think you want to see what's happening here. It doesn't feel good. It doesn't look pretty. And it's never for the reasons you envisioned, but it's essential. And I think if we were to test that 200-day, it sets up the second half of this year to have a huge move to the upside.
Yeah, it also speaks to the fact that, you know, when you have, you know, all of the devastation we talked about in the NASDAQ, Guy, you know, the idea is that the NASDAQ's not even down 9% from its all-time highs. But if you're a stock picker and you like Zoom or you like Peloton or you like, you know, some other fancy whiz bang app, which I know you do, you have tons of apps that you went to get at the application store. I mean, if you're a stock picker, it's been a hard time to be a stock picker, which is one of the reasons why, you know, we talk about futures, the minis, these are ways to hedge portfolios and they're very liquid and you could use stocks. Stops. But, you know, people don't tend to use that sort of risk management in single names that they, for some reason, get attached to, don't they, Guy?
Well, and we say this all the time as well. People will say here, Apple's been so good to me. Yeah. The old timers like myself will say General Electric prior to the last decade has been so good to me. I can say to you without equivocation that those companies don't know who you are. So do not get attached to single stocks. It's foolish. It might seem sort of romantic, but there's no truth to it whatsoever. Trust me when I tell you, the companies don't necessarily care, nor should you. And you should use some sort of risk parameters. Just because, you know, you've owned a stock for the last decade that's done you right doesn't mean it's going to continue to do so in the next decade. Now, here we are in something that's sort of done a lot of people right over the last few months, and that's crude oil. I mean, we're at multi-year highs, bouncing up against, or I shouldn't say bouncing up, touching up against the level we last saw in the fall. Question here in crude oil is, what does it mean to the broader market? And are we going to stop here once again? Are we going to fail here? I'll give you my answer. You know, I think higher crude oil through 85, potentially to 100, and I thought triple digits for quite some time. I think that ceases to be a positive for the market in the form of economies globally that are doing well. And it starts to be a considerable headwind. And I do think we're going to go blowing through this 85 level that we stopped at in the fall.
Yeah, you know, the thing I would just say is we contemplate, you know, Q4 earnings season. And again, we just talked about the banks. And what did investors not like about the banks? Higher expenses, which lead to lower profits, right? Which might be into a lower growth environment. Now, you could say that wages and some other input costs were the things that hit the banks. Crude oil is not one of them, right? But there are many businesses. There are many businesses where higher crude oil, if you are correct, and you have been correct for the last year on crude, bottom left to the upper right. Now, it's been very volatile, and it's been very volatile because of the Omicron and the Delta variant before that, right, and what that has meant for global trade. But if crude oil stays high, that's going to be a huge hit to consumer balance sheets, which are pretty good, except the savings rate is coming down now as the economies are reopening. And what does that mean for corporate profits, Guy? Because corporates are going to be able to pass through some of the costs of these higher expenses to their consumers, or they're going to have to eat them. And that comes in the form of earnings. And that's why we talk about valuation all the time in a higher interest rate environment, because investors price stocks lower, right, in higher interest rate environments. It's that simple.
The foundation of each company should be earnings growth, revenue, and revenue growth. And to your point, that earnings and subsequent earnings growth is going to take a bit of a hit. And oh, by the way, operating margins as well. And those are the metrics that investors look at. And as rates go higher, things get repriced. Don't take my word for it. Just look at what's happening in dozens, if not more, of these stocks that we talk about all the time. For example, a name like NVIDIA has been taken out to the woodshed, not because their business has changed. It's because valuations now become a concern. And by the way, there are dozens and dozens of names just like that. This is another thing we have to look at because, again, sort of one of the pillars of everything is what's going on with the U.S. dollar. Now, what's fascinating about this, Dan, in my opinion, as we've seen rates go higher, yes, we saw the dollar rally as well, but something really strange has happened since the beginning, well, late last year, December, into this year, and that's the dollar is starting to trade lower. Now, you ask yourself, well, what's going on? Well, because we're not the only one globally that is now raising interest rates on this battle to combat inflation. Now it's going on outside of China that you mentioned earlier, seemingly globally. And all these things are relative, right? The dollar is a relative thing. So if they're going to take action faster in Europe, for example, the DXY, which is 60% comprised of the euro, obviously is going to trade differently than you would expect it to.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think that chart is really interesting, though, when you look at it, because, you know, we draw those lines. They're important to get a sense. Everyone else is looking at them. There's a lot of stops, especially in big macro assets in and around technical levels here. But it did break that uptrend, you know, and there was after a period of consolidation, Guy, when the whole idea, when the Fed was getting more hawkish, and then the idea would be like, okay, well, then the dollar should go higher. And you bring up a great point. If you look at that Dixie, the U.S. dollar index, what, 50% is the euro and maybe 15% is the Japanese yen. So, you know, it's pegged against some stuff there that we might have some competition, to your point, about raising rates. All that being said, we saw what China just did. And maybe to your point, and I think you said this when we started the show, maybe the Fed has to blink at some point in the not so distant future if we really start getting more concerned about growth than we do about inflation. And who knows? But, you know, a rising dollar should not be great for crude oil, Guy. I mean, like, that's just what I know, and rising interest rates are, but we'll see. Let's see if it can get up there and make a new high. The Dixie, I think it just got to just below 97 here, but the thing is clearly range bound here. All right, Guy, we got to look at this.
Before we segue there, it's important, I think, just to bring this up, because what we didn't mention, one word we didn't mention, is geopolitical risk or phrase. And what's interesting, we're in now a window when the Olympics are going to start. And I've said this for a while. I think the China-Hong Kong tensions are going to escalate post-Olympics. Stay tuned for that. And obviously, Russia-Ukraine is only getting worse, not better. And those things are going to play into how not only crude trades, but how bonds trade and how the dollar trades. Again, if you were to see some sort of flare-up, you might see a flight to quality in the form of the bond market, which will take yields lower. You might see a flight to quality in the form of the U.S. dollar, which takes the dollar higher. We will see. But the one that you like to focus on, Dan, is Bitcoin, because we've sort of found a home sort of at this 40,000 or so level.
Well, I'll tell you, Guy, I mean, this fits in a lot of narratives. You're just talking about geopolitical, and we know that China was a huge source for mining, and they're worried about capital flight. So they banned Bitcoin mining last year, and that was a huge boon, I think, for the U.S. and some other nations in the West here. But, you know, this thing's been really volatile here. And, you know, you look at that move from 69,000 just a few months ago to a really, really important level in the chart. Guy, if you didn't know what this is, what we're talking about here, what would you think? You'd say this is kind of a make or break at that uptrend from the 2020, I don't know, fall, right? And it kind of had that huge drawdown last summer to that level, bounced, had a new high, and now it's come in about 40%. It's sitting right at that level here. What's your take purely technically? And then let's talk about maybe some of the extensions of the crypto market beyond Bitcoin.
Well, technically, you're looking at it's a quasi double top around those levels that you just outlined. Obviously, we sort of traded higher than it late last year. But I look at this trend line that we just held theoretically, and my quick response should be we should have bounced more aggressively than we have. And the fact that we're sticking around here is not particularly good. For example, if you were to go back to sort of July of last year, you see that we touched down to that trend line in the form of 30,000, give or take. But you see how quickly we bounced off it. Well, the same thing is not taking place here, which I think if you're bullish is somewhat concerning. Now, the jury is clearly still out. We could walk in on any given day and Bitcoin be trading either side of 50,000. I get it. We've seen it before. But just sort of examining this chart and using my technical analysis skills, which are few and far between, I would say if you're bullish, you got to be a wee bit concerned because we have not bounced nearly as aggressively as we did 6 or 7 months ago.
Yeah, you say that about your technical acumen, guy, but you grew up in the oil pits, didn't you, buddy? And you guys were looking at charts probably all the time, setting very tight stops, both up and down. Yeah, I think you make a really good point. I mean, look at just the rallies off of like near-term lows just since those highs in November. They're really anemic, right? And so it almost feels like we're about ready. If we were to break this kind of nice round 40,000 where it was maybe a little bit more than a week ago, maybe you see a quick flush to 30,000. And we have seen 10, 15% sort of flash crashes in this before. I'd like to think you probably have some support at that prior low from the summer, now near 29,000. I mean, listen, you know, I guess we talk about this a lot because it's a pocket of speculation. We spent a lot of time talking about the NASDAQ and high valuations in there and what it means, right, when we see higher interest rates or just more fear as far as owning risk assets. I just don't think Bitcoin's that different than a lot of those. And I think it's proving, you know, right now, at least this year, not to be a great inflation hedge because we know that inflation expectations are at 40-year highs. And this thing now is down 40% since the Federal Reserve said they're going to attack it. They're basically going to do the opposite of the reason that many people think Bitcoin was created for in the wake of the financial crisis, you know, back in 2009. So, you know, to me, I think it's important because it is a pocket of risk that is sometimes unaccounted for in traditional financial circles, which brings us also to like NFTs. There's a lot of people who've moved gains, whether it be in ETH or in Bitcoin, into NFTs, where ETH and Bitcoin are very liquid, but NFTs are not, guy. I mean, they're just not particularly liquid. If you have to sell some profile pic of some Bored Ape, now there might be demand for that, but there might not be demand for something else that maybe is just not on other people's radar.
Now, which is why you want to trade liquid assets, liquid securities that are traded on the CME, by the way, is why we talk about this. But listen, real quick, before we move on to Butters, this is the first time now in a decade for most crypto investors or traders that they've had to deal with a Federal Reserve. This is my word, that is trying to be responsible as opposed to the reckless Federal Reserve of the last decade or so. We'll see what happens if this Fed continues on course. What happens to crypto, Dan Nathan?
Yeah, but listen, guy, you're jumping ahead. You got Butters on the brain. We do Butters on Market Call Street Research on Thursday. But here's quickly one for the road here. And I know you're going to have a lot to say about this. But, you know, the CME, they got a lot of trackers. So go to CME.com and check them out. I thought this one was really interesting. The retail sales tracker for December, expectations for retail sales growth were like 3.9%. It came in, I think, at like 1.7 down there versus the prior month at 3.9. You know, we have a chart of the XRT up here, and you can see, I mean, the equity market might have had this right. You know what I mean? The direction of retail sales a little bit, guy. Just curiously, your take on consumer spending, retail sales, and then we got to hit this one last chart, and then I promise you we're going to get out of here.
No, listen, I apologize for that. I do have Butters on the brain. I think of one for the road, I think of him. But I look at this and say, you know, this is something that you've been talking about. The potential has always existed for this pull forward, right? People buying everything they need, and then subsequently this void takes place. Well, if you look at that chart, that's exactly what's going on. You saw this huge move to the upside into the fall, into the holiday season, theoretically, as people anticipated holiday buying. Well, guess what's happened since effectively Thanksgiving? These things have fallen off the cliff, which is not particularly good. And the individual names that comprise it are obviously been under significant pressure. So you have to wonder if the market continues to go lower, if inflation continues to go higher, what is that going to mean for sales going forward? I can't believe that paints a particularly rosy picture.
Yeah, and let's just look at Home Depot really quickly before we get out of here, Guy, because this is one where, you know, the stock had really, after that huge ramp a year ago, had just gone sideways. And then late last year, it broke out, and then it consolidated, and then it just went up in a straight line again. Well, here we are. We're round-tripping that entire move now. And if you look at that October breakout level down there at 345, lines up very nicely with the 200-day moving average. As you and I are talking right now, the stock's trading like 365. But, you know, again, using technicals as an input, Home Depot's a great company. You know, did investors just get a little too giddy about the thing over the last couple of months, and now they're puking it out? And if you want to buy a stock like this when you think the coast is clear, well, the charts are telling you where to do it, Guy. I mean, where to your eye is
well,
that
I
level?
Mean, I will tell you what's going to wind up happening is by the time it gets down there, that 200-day moving average and that trend line, well, not the trend line, the support line that you drew around 348 or so is going to coincide. And that's the level. I mean, if you want to round up, it's 350, but it's pretty clear that that prior high, if you go back all the way to the spring of 2021, 348 and change, is going to be huge support on the downside, which, by the way things are trading seems like we're going to get to in the not too distant future.
Yeah, well, listen, you know, this is market call macro, but what comprises the macro is some micro, and that's what we just did there a little bit, talking about retail, talking about some single names here. Okay, well, listen, man, thank you to everybody for tuning in here. I hope, Guy, this took a little load off, you know, like the weight here. But, and I'm not going to call you Fanny either, but thanks for tuning into Market Call Macro today. Be sure to check us out every Tuesday live at 11 a.m. Today's Market Call Macro is brought to you by our presenting sponsors, CME Group and Open Exchange. Guy and I will be back tomorrow, if you didn't get enough of us, for a special edition of Market Call Charts with Carter Braxton Worth of Worth Charting. And then again on Thursday for Market Call Street Research with our friend Liz Young from SoFi. We'll see you then there, Guy. You know, get some waiters, buddy, or do something, because we need you back here tomorrow.
Adios.
See you, bud.